Welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Laveau. Investigations of massive corruption have enraged some Western backers of the Kiev regime. This is odd. Corruption goes to the core of Ukraine's war effort. Expect the money to continue to flow. Why, you may ask? Because Europe's war on Russia is not only about Ukraine. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcast for The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And here in Moscow, we cross to Mark Sloboda. He's an international relations and security analyst. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's kick it off with George. Over the past few days, a flurry of reports of massive corruption in Ukraine. Their anti-corruption bureaus have expanded upon thousands of hours of tapes and transcripts and pictures of golden toilet bowls and stacks of dollars. I'm not surprised by any of this, George. I'm sure you're not. Mark is not. Let's remember. Let's go down memory lane. Before the special military operation, all through Western media, Ukraine is one of the most corrupt countries in the world. And on Fox News, that was one of the refrains you would hear all the time. It's one of the most corrupt countries in the world. The Europeans knew it, but now they're suddenly shocked, George. What do you make of it?
Well, it's a very interesting notion. You're absolutely right. The corruption in Ukraine has been endemic for years and years and years. I mean, we talk about the whole Burisma case. I mean, that started, you know, in 2014. It was launched by London. But I think one should also keep in mind that NABU was a creation of the Europeans. And the Europeans wanted to use this, but as a means of exerting their control over whoever rules in Kiev. So the people in NABU, they're not good guys. They're as belligerent, as Russophobic, as determined to keep fighting the war as is Zelensky and the people around Zelensky. But they are in good standing in Brussels, and it's a very lavishly funded institution, and all the Soroshites and the NGOs that are all a kind of satellites of NABU. But having said that, it is very interesting that the response of the European Union and, of course, the media has been not that, hey, well, this is really just a sinkhole. You know, where's this money going? I mean, look at this. This is taxpayer money is funding these golden toilet bowls and bidets. But it's on the contrary. Oh, this confirms everything that we've said, that Ukraine is now steadily on the path towards a responsible anti-corruption, you know, statecraft. So, you know, this just confirms that, you know, we're on the right track. And, you know, they tell Zelensky, you need to maintain this posture. You know, you just root out corruption. That means we need to spend even more. And Ursula von der Leyen and the rest are saying, we need to spend even more to Ukraine, because look what a thoroughly worthwhile project this is.
Well, Mark, you can take that argument when the check clears. Okay, the money is gone. Okay, George's argument is as well accepted here, because they're not going to the next step. Like, well, where did the money go and who took it? Well, their message is, look, we have identified the problem. Okay, I see this almost purely as political theater, because too much has been invested. This is a sunk cost fallacy. It's going to continue, and for reasons that we'll talk about in the second part of the program, this is not just about Ukraine.
Okay, well, I mean, you don't have to worry about the money being missing, because more money's on its way. Germany just, the same week that this corruption scandal broke open, Germany just announced, Merz, that they're going to spend an extra $3 billion on money on arms for the Kiev regime. So there's the pig trough will be refilled. Don't never fear. I actually think there is a bit more to this than just political theater. And George is right that NABU and SAPO, the Kiev regime's quote-unquote anti-corruption bodies, right, through which they were set up by the EU and the US, which still have oversight control over them. And they were intended as leverage. However, this was obviously in the pipeline, this investigation targeting Zelensky's close associates, his quote-unquote wallet, Timur Mandic, his energy minister, his justice minister, who have both resigned, the former defense minister, Rustem Umarov, who has also fled the country along with Mandic. Zelensky tried a few months ago, we talked about it, to gain control of Nabu and Sapo, and he saw this coming, and he was blocked by the European Union over this. But we have to take a look at, I mean, everyone in Ukraine in the government, in the previous government, in every government since 91 is corrupt. There's no question about that, right? That's factored into the cost of doing business with this proxy. The Western governments understand this. But who is doing this now? Who is weaponizing Nabu and Sapo against Zelensky? It does not appear to be the EU or the US, or if so, they're being unusually quiet and subtle about it. What Ukrainian media, the Telegram channels, are talking about is this is all dirty Maidan domestic politics, such as it exists in Ukraine. They're naming the former Kiev regime president, the candy oligarch Petro Poroshenko, who has an axe to grind. They're naming the mayor of Kiev, the former boxer and one of the figureheads of the Maidan, Vitali Klitschko. And the other one they're naming is Zelensky's spurned oligarch patron, Igor Kolomoisky, who is bragging that Zelensky is going down. Zelensky turned on him at one point, and now it appears he's getting his revenge. And the Europeans and the U.S. seem to be scratching their heads about all of this. They don't really seem to understand what's going on. The Europeans claiming they're disgusted by all of this corruption in Ukraine. Well, what does that make you? Should we be disgusted in you for feeding this corruption for the last decade?
Yeah, but It goes further, George. I mean, so yeah, I think that Mark is referencing the now infamous political article. Europeans are disgusted by this. Well, these are the same Europeans that want to steal Russian foreign assets in Belgium. I mean, where do you draw the line? You know, we're against corruption, but we're not against theft. I mean, square the circle for me. It doesn't make any sense.
No, of course it doesn't. And you're absolutely right. Because even during this week, Ursula von der Leyen is continuing to apply pressure against Belgium to, let go of its hesitations about handing over this 140 billion euros of Russian assets. And they are determined. They keep pressing and pressing and pressing for this 140 billion. So that money is going to go and disappear very quickly. I mean, corruption, endemic corruption, doesn't just vanish. I mean, it doesn't just, that now we're cured. There's no more corruption. And, everything is going to be done by the book. So they know this. And of course, they don't care. I mean, and the people are saying, they're going to get push Zelensky out. They're not going to push Zelensky out because Zelensky plays their game to a T. There's no reason whatsoever for them to replace Zelensky with anybody else, because there's no guarantee that anybody else would be as compliant and obedient as Zelensky has been. So that's why they want to continue to feed this creature. And, the Belgians are understandably saying, okay, well, we see where all this money goes. You know, when you got corruption and people start, spending money left, right, and center, then that 140 billion euros is going to disappear very quickly. And there's going to be a demand then for another 100 billion euros.
Well, and on top of it, because it is corruption, and by definition, it's opaque. Mark, I wonder how much of this corrupt money ends up back in the West.
Well, I'm considering that most of these Ukrainian Kiev regime politicians and oligarchs have property in the West, right? The former defense minister, he's still supposedly on the Security Council in Ukraine, Rustem Umarov. His family owns 7-Eleven apartments, expensive apartments in the West. And he's got an art gallery in Florida, right? We know where the money is. And it's
he's a man of great taste.
So I guess by taste. Trump's logic, this is all, it's all good. Maybe it's transferring some European money to the United States. That's That's the, you know, the way that they look at it. And the sums thus far being talked about, Naboo and Sapo, 100 million. I'm sure that's only the tip of the iceberg. But for the corruption in Ukraine, that's also just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, it's for you and me and everyone else, that's a large amount of money, but not when we're talking the regime in Kiev and how much money has gone through their filter and been siphoned off to the side. I think the real question is if Belgium continues to resist, and they're resisting not out of interest of Russia, of course, but because they don't want to be held then financially and legally responsible in foreign courts in Asia and the like when Russia presses lawsuits over this. And they also don't want the reputation of Euroclear as a place to invest money ruined. But if the Brussels technocrats put the lever, because they don't have anywhere else to draw the money from. The governments of Europe are bankrupt. They're bankrupt. Yep. They've brought themselves into bankrupt through a combination of their bad economic policies and the blowback from their sanctions, raising their energy costs. So they're saying it outright, right? If they don't steal Russia's money to fund the Kiev regime for another year or two, then the regime will fall this year. It will literally be bankrupt sometime in the spring because the U.S. isn't footing the bill anymore and the Europeans don't have the money themselves. They don't have it.
It just shows me, George, that this has just been one gigantic grift from the very, very beginning. Everybody's getting paid, okay? And they'll continue to be paid. I tend to think that Belgium will be forced one way or another to go through with this theft, okay? And, of course, when the lawsuits come, that will last a decade, maybe two decades. The people that made the decision will be long gone. George?
No, I agree on both counts because I think that Belgium will cave. I mean, so much pressure is being applied. I mean, Belgium is, it's not like Viktor Orban in Hungary, who's well used to withstanding pressure from Brussels. I think they're going to continue to apply pressure. And then you've got Ursula von der Leyen now issuing threats. Well, if we don't steal the money from the Russians, then we're just going to hit every single government in Europe, and they're going to have to fork over the money themselves. They're going to actually come out of the treasuries of all the governments of Europe. So we better get with the program and steal this money. Otherwise, your taxpayers are going to be directly on the hook.
Yeah, so what you're saying, George, is that one racket has to be imposed to keep another racket going on. All right, gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing some real news. And the real news I want to talk with Mark now is I alluded to it in the first part of the program. The West's war, specifically in the case of this program, Europe's war on Russia, it's not only about Ukraine. And it's not, people are not aware of that. This is a much larger agenda that has to do with the nature of the EU, where it's going to go forward, if it will move forward at all. And Russia is a focal point. It is they're laser focused on Russia for multidimensional reasons. Okay, it's just not Russophobia, Mark.
Yeah, I think that even once the conflict in Ukraine ends, presuming it will end, you know, in one form or another, you know, maybe a frozen conflict or something, but down the road. That will not end the conflict between Russia and the West, in particular Europe, because they've now been assigned by the U.S. as the role of you deal with Russia while we intend to go pivot China, but instead get stuck in the Middle East and Africa and South America and everywhere else because we just can't seem to make up our strategic minds. But I think we've seen an unusual phenomenon, particularly during the Trump administration, where the current European political foreign policy elite have become more ideological fervent in the pursuit of U.S.-led Western global hegemony than the current U.S. government, at least the administration of Donald Trump, is. They are true believers in this, and they see themselves as stewarding Western hegemony through this process, this uncomfortable, until the hegemon returns to proper form after Trump is gone again. They did it during his first administration, and they plan on just waiting it out and essentially carrying the torch, pursuing the policies that they think the U.S. should be pursuing, which is conflict with Russia, with China, with Iran, and you know, anyone else on the sidelines of that. And the Europeans, just they say it themselves. They are preparing for war with Russia. They say it, the political leaders, the military leaders, the intelligence leaders, they say it up and down all day long. They think that they're going to be at war with Russia in a few years. And that only means Russia's not going to attack NATO, hello, nuclear weapons. It's about Ukraine or perhaps Belarus or Moldova or these gray countries in between. And we see it. The Germans are about to reintroduce conscription. It comes into effect in January of this year. I don't know how, I mean, Merz's approval ratings are already pretty close to Starmer's in the UK, which is to say flushed right down that Ukrainian golden toilet.
I just cannot see how conscription in any European country, maybe the Baltic states for some reason, but I just don't see it. So, you know, George, if we look at the origins, the origin idea, at least politically and somewhat ideologically, of the EU was to create stability and prosperity. Well, it's failed at both. Okay, so is the whole mission now of the EU, the reason for its existence is to fight Russia? Because that's what it seems to be. Because I mean, they've trashed their economies. Okay, the immigration is uprooted social life. So is there reason for being? We have to fight Russia. I agree with Mark. You know, as a conduit to the West. You know, the law of unintended consequences are always in play. The U.S. is in la-la land right now. But, I mean, is this the unifying principle of the European Union now, or the European project?
I think it is. And so when you listen to the State of the Union by Ursula von der Leyen, the only thing she talks about is Russia and Ukraine. I mean, just do a quick search of how many times does she say Russia or Putin or Ukraine in a speech. That's all she talks about. There's nothing else. Apparently, there's nothing else going on in the European Union that she needs to address other than Russia. And that is exactly what it is. It's now become this mobilizing force to create this cohesion within
the— But is it working? Is it working?
Well, it's working in the sense that it is keeping the project going, okay. And it's using this this fear. And that's what they're doing. They're playing on fear, playing on this the public hysteria about Russia in order to accumulate ever more power to themselves. And they're using this, of course, against all recalcitrant member states who say, well, I'm not sure this is such a great idea, whether it's Hungary or Slovakia. So they're just using, well, you better get with the program or else. And, you know, and they have means of issuing threats. But you get von der Leyen, who we talked recently about this, that she's setting up this informational whatever the term is, you know,
resilience.
Exactly, informational resilience to make sure that untoward messages don't appear on the internet. But her latest project is to create an intelligence agency entirely under her control. She, an unelected figure, you know, completely unelected. An appointed figure is now going to have an intelligence agency that she is going to run. And for what purpose? So why do you have an intelligence agency? Well, intelligence agency is a preparation for war. And so she absolutely is saying, yes, she's going to be the president of this body that will be at war with Russia within a few years. And that,
Yep. The Stasi returns, okay? The Stasi returns. But see, given what, Mark, given what George just said here, that means that they, because of the this war footing, they can go into debt. They can uproot elections among member countries. Romania is a good example. Probably get rid of political parties that are unsavory. The alternative for Deutschland, I think, is a good on the chopping block here. Censorship, having a snitch culture. This is what the values of the European Union are now.
Yeah, I think actually I have to disagree with George on this one. I don't think it's working at all. In fact, I think it's failing catastrophically on every single measure. First of all, they're not able to support the Kiev regime, not militarily, not economically, not politically, seeing the destabilization in Kiev now, ostensibly by anti-corruption watchdogs that they themselves set up. What's more, the whole cause of creating an information to control or an institution to control information and narratives, the upteenth one, it must be said, during this conflict, is because they're failing. They're failing to control their own populations. Resistance to all of this is growing as more and more people start to understand why their living standards in Europe are going down. We see support for the centrist parties that have pursued this just drain away in almost every country in Europe at this point. Now, some of them have more structured where they're able to shuffle and keep things under control, but it's happening just barely. The finances of European states are just collapsing. Their own militaries are a joke. They're a paper tiger. And, you know, all this talk that we're going to be fighting Russia in a few years, with what army? Yeah, I mean, you better hope for the U.S. Army, because even as Mertz is talking up the biggest military, he's right now transferring money from the defense budget through a financial sleight of hand to prop up holes in his state welfare budget. Why? Because they're bankrupt. Germany is in recession, as you know, Europe as a whole is going. And this intelligence unit, I don't think that this is actually intended as a foreign intelligence unit. I think this is directed at recalcitrant EU countries like Hungary and Slovakia. That is a sign of where things are going. The EU could fall apart at the end of this. This is where all of this is going. The EU itself could splinter as a result of a Western loss to Russia, and the Europeans not able to accept that or do anything about it.
Well, you bring up a good point, because, George, it's unacceptable for these people that Russia can win, however you define it. And they will go to any lengths to avoid that. That's what makes this a very scary moment, because they cannot, because they think they're morally superior, culturally superior, all of this nonsense. They believe in their own origin myth, George.
No, I think so. And so when we talk about failure and success, well, of course, in any rational way of thinking, of course, it's a failure. But then if one were to think rationally, then the Europeans
wouldn't be doing this.
Because, you know, 2021, 2022, you could have come to a very reasonable arrangement with Russia and gone on enjoying your peaceful, happy life. I mean, why go through all of this other than to, bring everybody under control? And they can go on doing this because, yes, resistance is growing, but the resistance can also be fought, and then they can crush it. But for instance, Viktor Orban, they're going to pull out all the stops against him in next April's election. It may succeed. He's underwater in the polls. He could pull it around, but it may succeed. And they're going to try. They're going to try doing that with Robert Fico. They're going to try to make sure that the National Rally Party in France fails. They've already done all sorts of things. So they can keep the show on the road for a few years longer. And that's really their perspective, keep it going for a few years longer. And of course, ultimately, the goal is To get the Americans involved. I mean, that's what it is, to provoke this war with Russia, but the Americans will be on board. And I agree with what Martin, with what Mark was saying earlier, which was that they're waiting out Trump. You know, they're thinking, well, okay, order will be restored once Trump is gone and some of a familiar kind of Atlanticist figure will take the helm in Washington, somebody like Marco Rubio. And then we can get our war. And I think that's really the plan here. Let's just keep this going for 2, 3, 4 years longer, deal with any dissent within the EU. We can outlaw some political parties. We can cancel elections, apply pressure, imprison, you know, political leaders we don't like. And then we'll get the American leader that we want.
Yeah, but you, George, you're absolutely right. All of this could have been avoided if they had wanted to. But they didn't, and history will judge them. We always have too little time on this program. I want to thank my guests in Moscow and in Budapest. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RTC. See you next time, and remember, cross-talk rules.